Thank you, Tabby. Amazing. Hello, everyone. Good morning. Happy freezing cold Sunday morning. It's cold out there, but it's warm in here, all right? Last weekend, some of our city leadership got the opportunity to walk through a weekend kind of spiritual formation journey together, and I got the chance to meet my spiritual director, who I've been walking with for about 3 years now, and got to meet her for the first time in person, and it was such a gift. And part of that weekend is to kind of lay out your life's timeline, to look from beginning to where you are in the present moment and kind of map out some of these big moments of your life and kind of step back and look at it through the lens of spiritual formation and through the lens of like watching what God has been doing in your story and in your life and all of these moments. And there are so many insights in this exercise, but one thing in particular just stood out to me so strong in my story and looking at it was the undeniable turning point that was my life in 2018. And this is when I was really introduced to the concept of spiritual formation. The ways and the practices of Jesus and really shaping my whole life, all of my life around his way of living. And that's kind of weird to say now, even looking at it, because I've been walking with Jesus, you know, pretty much my whole life and was in vocational ministry at the time. But this was new for me. This paradigm of the way of thinking was new for me. And for me, it was like a click, like a light bulb had just come on. And like I had just been given a taste of something that I was starving for, and I didn't even realize that I was hungry at the time. That's what it felt like. And to look at my life and just the amount that has changed since then, and I'm not talking about external change, although there's a lot about externally about my life that has changed since then, but what I'm talking about is internal change, an internal transformation, the things that no one sees, a spirit-empowered transformation. And I knew this about myself, but to step back and look at it with fresh eyes, it was such a gift, and to see how much growth had happened in really a short amount of time in the scheme of life was so amazing. And I say all this to say, there's a reason that we are spending these first two messages of the year talking about the rhythms that God has set into place, the practices that Jesus has given us. It's because it leads to true transformation. Really, it does. If today feels very similar to last week, that's on purpose. We want this to settle in and to take root in your life and begin to produce what it's going to produce. The practices are not the end. The end goal is not to see how many things that we can be actively doing day in and day out, week in and week out. No, they are a means to an end. And the end is always being shaped and formed more and more into the image of Jesus. I said it like this in my last CityU class: practices create the space where transformation can take place. They create the space. The Spirit of God transforms. That's his work. He transforms. Our work is creating space for that transformation to happen. Last week, Pastor Matt kicked us off, and we looked at God's design for life all the way back to Genesis 1, and we talked about how we serve a God who works and rests. You produce and you enjoy. God is not a workaholic. He's not having to pop in and make sure that everything is running the way that he set things into motion to run. And we looked at how you can live from this place of emptiness, allowing production and anxiety to dominate your life, which is the cycle that so many of us get caught in. And then maybe we are out of it for a while and then we get sucked back in, and trying to give out of something that you don't have, trying to pour out into others around you from an empty vase. You can live from that place, or you can live from a place of overflow where you can find rest and renewal, peace and joy. And what we find all throughout the narrative of Scripture are these rhythms that work best for our lives. And this rhythm was there and was established at the very beginning. As a worship team, up here every single Sunday morning. When we're standing up here doing worship, we have headphones in our ears, and they are called in-ear monitors. And so we're able to hear things that you can't hear. We can hear each other. We can hear the vocals and the musicians. We also can hear our music director that can kind of tell us where to go in certain times of the service. And also there is what we call a click. And a click is simply that. It sounds like a click. It sounds like this. And that keeps us on tempo, on beat, and all together on the right tempo for the song. Now, you all can't hear the click, and you wouldn't know that it was there unless I tell you that it's there, or unless a few of us start to get off of the click. If a few of us get off of the click, then you will definitely know. You may not know exactly at the first what's happening or what's wrong, but you would definitely know that something is off. God has set a rhythm into creation, a tempo, and a beat. And when we fight that, you may not know immediately what's happening, you may not know immediately what's going wrong, but you will know that something is off. And this rhythm looks a little bit like this: work and rest, public and private, engagement and disengagement. In Exodus 20, we started in this text last week. We know that Israel is coming out of Egypt. God has delivered his people and he has sent them out into the wilderness. And don't we love the wilderness in the Bible? The wilderness is the place of transformation. And here we see this happening. God is trying to reshape a people after his heart and his ways. God is trying to pull them out of slavery, actual slavery and also the mindset of slavery, and into freedom. God brings them to Mount Sinai for a transformation into a new way of life, a way of life that leads to life, as God always does. God gives them the law. He says, here's how my people operate. Here's how a people under my name live out their days. This is not just a list of do's and don'ts, but how you experience life. The commandments don't enslave, they're intended to bring freedom. You see, we're not intended to live a life without guardrails, a life without these boundaries. These boundaries keep us safe and secure. So we are introduced in this passage of scripture to the law, the Ten Commandments. Have no other gods before me. The God of Israel, capital G, is not like the gods, lowercase g, that are around you. Do not make any idols or images. Do not worship those idols or images. God cannot be contained or managed into an idol made by man. You may see others around you worshiping, making man-made images and idols to worship, but do not make those images and idols. Do not misuse the name of the Lord. Don't take the name of the Lord lightly. Don't act in my name in a way that I would never act. Do not dishonor the name of the Lord. It's holy and to be revered. And number four, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. The fourth commandment is a bridge that connects commandments 1 through 3 to 5 through 10. The fourth commandment reaches back to the first commandment and forward to the tenth and acts like a bridge, like a hinge, if you will, that connects them all. If you believe commandment one, if he is God, if he is king, if he is Lord, then you Sabbath. Walter Brueggemann says it like this: the Sabbath and the fourth commandment is an act of trust in the subversive, exodus-causing God of the first commandment, an act of submission to the restful God of commandments 1, 2, and 3. Sabbath is a practical divestment so that neighborly engagement, rather than production and consumption, defines our lives. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Keep it set apart. Keep it like a day that is unlike any other day. So what sets Sabbath apart? Let's talk about a few of the things that Sabbath is. Sabbath is counter-cultural. It runs against the grain. The people around you are not going to be making the same choices that you are. Everyone will begin, when you start to set aside this time, when you start to step into this practice, everyone will begin to grab for this time. You will have to say no. You will have to say no to good things. This will not be easy. It sounds so good. I've talked about Sabbath a lot just personally because it really has transformed my life. I've taught on Sabbath a lot, and I really haven't met a person that when talking about what Sabbath is was like, yeah, I don't think that doesn't really sound that good to me. I think I'll pass on that. Like everyone's like, that sounds amazing. I just have no idea how to like make that happen. It sounds like a fantasy. It sounds like how in the world could I actually do that? It sounds good, but the actual practice of it, when you start to step into it, it will feel counter. And that's because it is. It will feel that way. Sabbath is an act of resistance. This is some of that we feel whenever we step into it. We're resisting something. It's a way of pushing back. It's a way of pushing back and saying stop, of actively saying no more. And Sabbath marks our identity as God's people. To really do this, to really stick to it, will make you not look like those around you, and that is intentional. It's supposed to be that way. This marks us as God's people. It displays our trust in God with our chosen actions that may look different than those around us. This whole thing is rowing upstream versus rowing downstream. You can kind of get that imagery in your mind for just a moment. Upstream versus downstream. One requires no movement. You can step back and just let it take you where it's going to take you. Just going with the flow. This is the way of our culture. And one requires great resistance and intention. We have to intentionally know where we're going. We have to set it against the current and begin to row and begin to actively resist. If you don't set out to do this and make a plan and stick to that plan, it won't happen. It is not flowing downstream. You will not simply drift into Sabbath. You will not simply drift really into any of the practices of Jesus. That's just not how it works. We are actively resisting our culture, and it feels this way, especially at the beginning. As Jesus would say, there is a narrow and a wide gate. Matthew 7, 13 and 14. Go in by the narrow gate. The gate that leads to destruction, you see, is nice and wide, and the road going there has plenty of room. Lots of people go that way. But the gate leading to life is narrow, and the road going there is a tight squeeze. Not many people find their way through. There is a narrow road, a road that is less traveled, the path of love and sacrifice and trust in God, a way of life, a path, a road that leads to life and life abundant, as Jesus promised, here and now and in the life to come. Available to us right now in this moment. Life like he has designed it. It's the narrow road. And then there is a broad road, the popular road, the path of selfishness and personal gain and more and more, and this road leads to death. For Israel, all the other people around them were building statues and shrines and idols, and they were defined by their production and what they were producing and acquiring new land and conquering new land. But God says to Israel, you are different. You are a people under my name. And you are going to look different than everyone else around you. You are going to act different. You're going to make different choices. And this is also what God says to us. You are a people under my name. You, the people of God, must be different. We cannot bow and build our lives and worship the idols of our culture. And that's an easy thing to drift into. We cannot build our lives around the idols of our culture. Everyone around us is chasing after these idols, whether they realize it or not. We see this all of the time, chasing wealth and fame and success. To be known is filling some sort of hole inside of me. You are what you do. You are what you accomplish. You are the title that is after your name, or you are the title that you are seeking education for or going after, that this is somehow your identity, that you're defined by your standard of living, this idol of more in our culture that is rampant. You're defined by your kids and what they are going to do with their lives, and their success is a direct reflection. And so we've got to get them in every single activity. We got to find all the things that they need right now. And so we dive into that and we give them everything, and we have no space. We fill every second with as many pleasures as possible because you only live once. And so eat, drink, and be merry. And we've got to get ours while we can. This is some of the idols of our culture. And what we have to do as the people of God is to step back and take an honest reflection of our actual lives and our family's life. Because what our lives are actually built around is what we worship. We can say what we want, we can sing what we want, but what are our lives actually built around? Yes, it's what we confess, but it's how we live. The way of Jesus bids us to another way. And the practice of Sabbath and the spirit of what Sabbath is and what it leads us to, it leads us to that way. It leads us to his way. The fourth commandment reaches back to the first commandment and forward to the 10th. If you believe the first commandment, then you will Sabbath. And if you Sabbath, you will be enabled to love the people around you and to fulfill commandments 5 through 10. When life is about frantic production and continual consumption, then everyone else around you is reduced to a threat and a competitor. They're commodities that are either against you or they're working for you. It becomes impossible to truly love people. It produces a system of death. It now becomes impossible to fulfill commandments 5 through 10. Again, it's a pyramid scheme. It has the illusion of good things. It promises a lot of things, but it cannot live up to those promises. And in turn, it leads us to death. And those who refuse to honor the fourth commandment will live by this death system, whether we are aware of it or not. And so let's look at some of the qualities of Pharaoh's system. It's a system of restlessness and anxiety. It's a system of acquisition and the pursuit of more. It's a system that abuses others for gain. It's a system that is never satisfied and never content. More, more, more. More anxiety, more worry, having to use people. It's a cycle that happens. One sobering thing that we have to remember here is this: we choose another way, and we choose to stop to ensure that we are not a slave to this system of death. But we also choose to stop to ensure that we are not a slave driver to those around us. There may be areas in our life that we are Pharaoh and we don't even realize it. If I never stop, I'm teaching those around me they can't stop either. If I am always available and I never set any boundaries, I am saying that my expectation is that you should do the same. Whether I say that with my words or not, because expectations and culture and your family's life and culture or your job's work and culture is far more caught than taught. Meaning they're watching what I'm doing more than what I'm saying. What kind of leader are you to those around you? Does it feel like the system that we just laid out, or does it feel like Yahweh's system? Yahweh's system is one of rest and Sabbath, of engagement and disengagement, of work and rest. It's a system of trust and faith. It's a system that elevates love to the highest quality, not about using people around me or competing with people around me. It's about loving them in the best way that I possibly can. How do I love you for you, not for what you can do for me? A system that brings true peace. without Sabbath rest, without a heart and soul that is renewed and transformed time and time again, we can never fulfill the greatest commandment as Jesus described. Love God and love others. And from this place of Sabbath, we reach back to the first command and forward to the last, to love God and to love others in the best possible way that we can. Every time that we truly Sabbath, we realign ourselves as the people of God. It's a continual choice that we make week in and week out. When we choose to stop and we choose to Sabbath, we're realigning ourselves as marked by a people of God. We are a people of God. Israel is forced to continually re-choose between life and death. Yahweh and the gods of their ancestors, Yahweh and Baal, the true God and the gods of this world, the idols of the culture, the way of Torah and the way of sinners. And the same choice is true for us. It may look different. The choices may be a little bit different, but it's same for us. We want to be a people aligned with God, choosing his life over every other way. So let's break it down for just a bit. What is Sabbath and what can it practically look like for each and every one of us right now, like this week? Sabbath, like all of the other practices, are embodied, meaning they must be put into action in order to produce something in your life. We can have a great time teaching here, you know, last week and this week, and you can feel a certain type of way and feel encouraged or feel convicted or feel inspired, but it's just gonna stay there. This is just step one. If we don't actually step out and begin to practice it. Sabbath is an intentional time, traditionally a 24-hour period to stop, rest, delight, and worship. And those last four words are where we will spend the rest of our time together and kind of get down all the way to ground level to see what this will look like for our actual real lives. I like to look at them as four movements of Sabbath, and they're all based upon the English translations of the Hebrew word Shabbat. Stop, rest, delight, and worship. I'll give a little bit about each, and I'm gonna give you a question under each one of these movements. And I really want you to, like, if you have a journal, if you have a pen, like, get it out. If you have your phone, get in the notes section. I really genuinely want you to write them down so that you have a way to kind of take this step that I'm talking about and actually put it into your life. These questions will be reflections for you in the next few days to really dig into. What does it look like for you to actually practice Sabbath? Because knowledge is great, but knowledge alone cannot transform. Remember, the practice creates the space where transformation can take place. So I want to give you some tools to reflect so that you can begin to create that space and let the Lord do what he does and transform your heart and life. So the four movements of Sabbath, number one is stop. The word Sabbath comes to us from the Hebrew Shabbat, and that word literally means to stop or to cease. When our kiddos were little and we just initially started the practice of Sabbath, we used to always say to cease and celebrate, and the girls would say it too, and to cease and celebrate. But Sabbath is more than just a day. It really is a way of being in the world. It's a spirit of restfulness that comes from abiding, from living in the Father's presence all week long. That's just what naturally happens. It kind of bleeds into the rest. When you really begin to practice it, it bleeds into the rest of your week. And ideally, this Sabbath is more than just a day off. It's not just a day off because, as we all know, a day off is just a day that I do all of the work that I don't get paid to do, right? Okay, so it's more than a day off. It's a day to simply to stop. To stop working, to stop wanting, to stop worrying, to just stop. It's a scheduled time to remind ourselves that we are not God. I am not God. I can stop and the plates are still gonna be spinning. I can stop and the world keeps on turning and things keep on happening around me. And everything may not get done. Everything may not get done exactly the way that I want it to, but you know what? That's a good reminder for us too, that we can be okay with that, and it's not the end of the world. We can stop. To really actually stop challenges our control issues, and ultimately what it challenges is our trust in God. Do I actually trust him enough to really actually stop? And not say I'm stopping and like, oh, but it's just gonna take care of that real quick, it's okay. On the Sabbath, we release the illusion of control to God. Because whatever control we think we have, ultimately we know is an illusion, right? And we release this illusion of control to God. Sabbath is a way of saying, God is enough, I am enough, and I have enough. And so I can stop and enjoy. It's an act of resistance, as we already said, pushing back against this world of more and more and more. If you want more, you got to keep going. But if you're content, we can stop. And so we simply stop. We hop off of the wheel and we just say, for today, enough. Enough. So, first question for you to write down, what would it look like for you to step into the stop of Sabbath? What would it look like for you to step into the stop of Sabbath? Number two, rest. Rest is not a dirty word, and we do not need to feel guilty about rest, okay? And if this helps, and I say this because really and truly, genuinely, this helps me. It's scheduled rest. So if it's in my calendar, and I get to that place, okay, my calendar says I must rest now. And so then I can step into it, which I realize that makes me sound so boring and like such a square. But I am who I am, okay? And it really genuinely helps me for that to be the case. And so it is scheduled rest. It's on the calendar. And so we can step in and follow that. That's why I think it's so important for it to be the same time every week, for it to start the same time, for it to be a continual rhythm. That helps. We must lean in and follow that when that is the case. A.J. Swoboda says this, "The Sabbath has largely been forgotten by the church, which has uncritically mimicked the rhythms of the industrial and success-obsessed West. The result? Our road-weary, exhausted churches have largely failed to integrate Sabbath into their lives as vital elements of Christian discipleship. It is not as though we do not love God. We love God deeply. We just don't know how to sit with God anymore." Oh, that's good. We don't know how to sit with God anymore. Again, our lack of rest, it ultimately shows our lack of trust. To rest, to sleep, to take a nap, to let our being outweigh our doing, to actually not produce, what a practice and a continual reminder that we all need. To actually say, not just with our words, but with our bodies, with our actions, and with our choices, I trust in God. I trust in God, and I am okay with simply being with him, and that is enough. In my last CDU class, we really wrestled with the question, am I okay wasting time on God? This sounds very poetic and we sing about this, but am I actually okay wasting time on God, just sitting with God and not trying to produce anything? Am I okay if I set aside 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, and I sit with God, and I actually don't really feel anything, or I don't have any revelations to write in my journal, or something profound doesn't happen. When I walk away, do I still feel like that was the best use of my time? Am I okay sitting with God and resting in his presence? Question number two for you to write down, what would it look like for you to step into the rest of Sabbath? To step into the rest of Sabbath. Number three, delight. What brings you joy? What could you do for one day a week that would fill your life up with deep joy? That's going to look different for you than it does for me. It's about what stirs up your soul. What stirs up your soul is probably going to look different for you than me. What fills you back up in ways that other things don't. Notice how non-legalistic that is. What stirs up your soul? What brings you delight? What brings you joy? There's a term now that psychologists are using called pleasure stacking that I talk about a lot. I think that's a really valuable like grid for Sabbath. Like, what pleasures and joys in my life can I save up for this day and kind of stack them up for maximum enjoyment? Okay? That doesn't mean that any of them have to be big. They can all be little small things, but things that bring me joy, things that bring me peace, things that fill me back up, certain foods that you save on Sabbath, or more than one food. I'm going to have an appetizer and a meal, and I'm going to have a dessert, and maybe we go find another dessert somewhere, all right? Like, what does that look like for you? Certain rituals or delights that you save up for this day and this time. Compile a list of some of those things. Make that a part of this upcoming week. Take note of what brings you joy. Take note of what fills you up. Like, when I have the house to myself and I light a candle and I have a book, man, I can, so much can happen in 2 hours for my soul and restoring inside of me, okay? So what's that for you? Take note of those things and then figure out a way to get them into your Sabbath. Figure out a way to put that into that time. Make a list, talk about it with your spouse or with your best friends or roommates, then create a day where you can stuff as many of those things in as possible. The Sabbath is a day to enter into delight, to taste and see that the Lord is good through all of the things that he has created you to enjoy the most. Where do you think that joy comes from? Why do you think you really love that food? It's because God created you that way. And so when we step into these delights, it's not about how big they are or how profound they are. It's just about taking note, like, I really love this. Thank you for creating me to really love this. I love the way you made food taste this certain type of way. Thank you, Lord. It pulls us back to the Creator. It pulls us back to him, the one who gave us those things to enjoy in the first place. That is holistic worship, worshiping with our whole life and worshiping through our joy. So what brings you joy? And third question, what would it look like for you to step into the delight of Sabbath? The delight of Sabbath. And number four, worship. When we can really do those first three movements, the automatic result is gratitude and worship. The automatic result is being pulled into worship of our Creator. Again, worship is anything to index your heart towards grateful recognition of God's reality and goodness. It is what I was just talking about, letting those things, all those things in our life, pull us back to our Creator. And the reality of him and the reality of his goodness, which is all around us, and we just miss it because we're busy and because we don't have the time to stop and recognize and index our hearts towards his reality and his goodness. Worship as in a whole life orientation to God. On Sabbath, we lean into those things that pull our attention away from the distractions and the worries of the week, and we set our gaze on God. We do this so often in our time of praise and worship here at the beginning to just take time to, we're gonna just take a moment and set our gaze on God, to set our gaze back on Jesus, to set our gaze back on the Creator. My delight, I point it to you. My attention and my affection, I point it to you. His goodness, his kindness, his power and sovereignty, the way that he is in control over all things. We step into worship in this time and fix our eyes on him. Sunday is a really good day for a lot of people to Sabbath and to step into what that looks like. And part of the reason is because this is already a built-in rhythm. To start our day, to start that time together in worship, with our brothers and sisters in Christ, and to lift him up and to set our gaze back on him. This is really what fills us up in a sustainable way, the worship of it all. power and a filling outside of ourselves, a supernatural time of rest that is fueled by our worship of the creator of the universe. We become what we behold. Sabbath is a time to put God in front of us and behold him. To behold him. And to become more like him. What pulls your attention and your affection to God in worship? And last, what would it look like for you to step into the worship of Sabbath? Jesus said, Sabbath is a gift for man. This has been given to us as an actual real life gift from God. How can we step into that gift? Stand with me this morning. If you would just close your eyes for just a few moments. Just set aside just a few minutes to just reflect. To let Holy Spirit speak to our hearts for what this looks like for our life. Pay attention to maybe something that was highlighted in the message. That's not coincidence. Maybe this is a practice that you have been consistent with in the past, but there's been a drifting. I know that that personally has happened to me time and time and time again. No shame or condemnation, just a turning back to him. What does this look like for me now in this season? I want to choose you. I want to choose to align myself to you, God. Thank you for your voice, God, ever leading and ever guiding us. And prepare our hearts, Lord, as we prepare to come to the table together.